Sometimes when you're at Mass and you hear the gospel and you get to the end and you realize you have no idea what you just heard, it's your fault because you weren't paying attention. Sometimes when you get to the end of the gospel and you have no idea what you just heard, it's because the reading's just difficult. You're off the hook. It's a difficult reading. And when I looked in all the books, the commentaries to see, it would always start off with, this is the most difficult parable that we have. Oh, great. Maybe it's just this guy. Open up the next one. We don't really know what's going on here. Open up the next one. Cajetan, who was one of the great philosophers and theologians of the Middle Ages, said you could never penetrate this gospel. Oh, gosh. Maybe I'll preach on Amos. As it turns out, we can make sense of this parable. We just have to walk through it. So what happens? The master has a steward. And the steward squanders the master's money, his property. He messes up. Maybe he's dishonest. Maybe he's just incompetent. But he's going to get fired. So the master brings him in, and he tells him this. And the steward doesn't protest. He doesn't say, you've got the wrong man. He knows it was his fault. So what does the steward do? He says, I'm too weak to dig and too proud to beg. This is an idiom. Basically, what the steward is saying is, I don't want my status to be downgraded. It's not that he's too weak to dig. He doesn't want to. It's beneath him in a certain way. So he's got a plan. He's got to hatch his plan. He knows in his mind, my employment is coming to an end, and I have to prepare for what's coming after my employment. So he brings in the people who owe his master debts, and he gives them a discount. He says, you owe me 100? Pay me 50. Pay me for 50. What's he doing here? Being merciful? We don't really know what he's doing. He could be doing one of three things. So on the one hand, he could be saying, I'm going to give up my commission. Maybe he owes 100, and he's going to give up his own commission. Maybe he's going to take the master's cut and reduce that. Or maybe he's going to say, the interest that the master's charging, we're going to abolish that. But the basic idea, regardless of what he's doing, is he's trying to get the other people to like him. If I give you a discount, you're going to like me. If I'm working at Deacon Dan's car dealership and I sell you a great car, do you care if it costs Dan money? No, you're going to like me. So he's trying to get the people to like him so that when he's fired, and he needs places to go, and he needs employment, they'll be happy to see him. They'll give him a job. He won't lose his status. So this is what Jesus is saying. Children of the world who seek worldly goals are often very smart about how they accomplish it. They see their goal, and they plan in advance for what they need to accomplish. So kids, when they graduate high school, they think in their heads, I want to be a doctor by the time I'm 35. And at 18, they'll start taking out loans and going to school and doing the preparatory work. They have a goal, and they act now to accomplish it. We don't always do that as Christians, as followers of God, as children of the light. I want to suggest one way in which we can be more prudent about our goals. But first, I need to talk about 3,000 years of salvation history. I'll do it in 20 seconds, don't worry. When God calls Abraham, he starts working through Abraham and his descendants, his family. And through his family, he starts working with the tribes of Israel and the judges who are leading the tribes and the kingdom of Israel and the divided kingdom. In the Old Testament, God is always working through the people of Israel as a group, as a community, as a collection of people together. It's always the corporate identity of the Jewish people he's dealing with. And when Jesus comes, he forms a community, 12 disciples, mirroring the 12 tribes of Israel, and they eat together, and they travel together, and they study at Jesus' feet together. It's a community. And when Jesus ascends into heaven, the apostles go out to different parts of the world, and they form churches, communities. Read Paul's letters. It's amazing how much time he spends just trying to navigate the relationships within the communities that he's writing to. And just listen to the titles: Philippians, Ephesians, Colossians, Corinthians, Romans. They're communities, they're groups of people he's usually writing to. And when the apostles moved on, they appointed successors, bishops. Bishops in Greek, episkopos, it means overseer, to oversee the community. Down to this day, God has always chosen to work through communities. I guess we can ask why. And to kind of get a sense of why, we can also ask, well, what are our goals? Remember, right? The children of the world see their goals and they pursue them now. What are our goals as Christians? What are we trying to accomplish? What do we want from our faith? What does Christ want from us? Anyone? Go to heaven. Perfect. That's what he says. Eternal dwellings. Go to heaven. Go to heaven. Love one another. Love God. The Great Commission. Go and make disciples of all nations. Each and every one of these goals is easier to accomplish in a community. I feel every time I'm preaching, someone else says something I want to say better than me. Just a couple weeks before, I preached Corpus Christi, and Pat Hole gave a better talk on the Eucharist than I did. Now I want to preach about community, and Kurt Snyder gave a better talk about the values of community than I can. Right? When you have a community, it helps you with your relationship with God. Because, as Kurt said, you can share your experiences. You have people who have the same commitments, the same values, the same world outlook, and they can support you. They can give you advice. They can give you help to help you grow. Our relationship with God grows because of community. We can only love one another, too, if we're in community. It's hard to love somebody if you're not interacting with them. We need to make disciples of all nations. We need to make disciples. How better to make a disciple than to show the outside world what Jesus' love looks like when lived out? How easier to do this than to model it within our community? You have a friend you want to invite to church. Are they more likely to see Christ's love in a community that knows and likes each other, or at least loves each other? Or if we're fighting and don't know each other and just check in and check out. It's through a community that people are going to be able to see what it's like to live as a Christian. And so I've been very happy, been very encouraged to see this parish. I got here about three, 4 months ago. I'm very impressed. There's That Man Is You. We were trying to get our picture directory taken. Alpha. There's the young adults are starting up. Various forms of community. I heard Father Dan say something in the sacristy yesterday that I really liked. He looked at the announcement and says, we have too many announcements. That's a good thing. It means we got a lot going on right now. And again, I got here 4 months ago, and God willing, I get ordained in June. I'm probably going to be gone. Will move me somewhere else. And so I get it. I'm a bad messenger to sell you on the community of St. Mary's. But I do want to tell you that sincerely, in the time I've been here, my faith has benefited from this community. And there are wonderful opportunities for your faith to grow as well. And so I can only thank the people here who have made this possible and recommend to everyone else, maybe not as involved, maybe they are involved, to recommend everyone else to take advantage of all these opportunities that are offered at this parish. Very blessed to be here because your faith depends on it.